Bandwidth for this podcast is brought to you by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com. This is the iOS Show, episode 243, recorded on February 22nd, 2015. Enjoy! All right, it's time for the iOS Show, where we cover all things iOS and beyond. I'm Michael Johnston, and with me is Jeff Gamet, who's not eating dead baby chickens. Hey, Jeff, how's it going?
It's going really good now that I'm not eating dead baby chickens.
Yeah.
Because they were good.
You bought the correct eggs, and I was mistaken.
Or yes, maybe not. My eggs were unfertilized ovum.
Good.
Om nom nom.
Om nom nom, indeed. They weren't puffin eggs, though.
No, they were chicken eggs. My dad, who was raised on a farm in Iowa, refers to them as cackleberries.
Cackleberries?
Yes, which caused all kinds of stress for me and my little sister growing up. I'm surprised we didn't need therapy over that.
Interesting. Speaking of needing therapy, have you seen the video of the chicken laying the egg, like from the butt end?
No, but,
And Michael, you need to get your anatomy correct. Yeah, I'm pretty sure they don't come out the butt.
I know they don't come out the butt. I'm just saying that the video camera was trained on. So if assuming that there are two principal butt or principal ends to a chicken, one being the head and one being the butt, you'd be looking at the butt end because at the head there's nothing interesting going on.
Now, and Adam Christensen is also here. I haven't watched an egg come out of a chicken. However, my girlfriend's chicken, one of them, got we thought it had an egg obstructed.
Ah, so you reached in there.
Yeah, so that's a two-person project.
Wow, yeah, you got one person to hold the chicken.
And the other person to violate its sanctity and get the egg out so it doesn't kill the chicken.
So, and then in the end, there was no egg?
No, there wasn't.
Well, good for you.
Yeah, so it turns out the chicken had some other infection. But it survived, and it's still a feisty little bird, and she's laying eggs. And so it was a happy ending.
So now is there anyone left listening to this podcast at this point?
I hope so.
Only people that are into animal husbandry.
Yeah, so that's Adam Christensen of the MattCast.
Way to turn everybody off to the show.
And
good job, guys.
Yeah, good job, us. We did
it. I wasn't participating in this.
No, but you were passively because you weren't doing anything to stop us.
Ugh.
Yeah.
I tried.
Yeah.
Too late.
It's the worst crime, the crime of inaction.
Yeah, I'm good. I'm back.
Yeah. Yeah.
Missed you while you were gone.
You were at Kennedy Space Center.
Yes.
Among other things. But that
and
was
Harry Potter Land.
Well, that was probably not as interesting as checking out rockets.
They were both incredibly amazing.
Yeah?
Yes.
You said you saw some Skunk Works?
Well, it's called Swamp Works.
Swamp Works. Okay, that makes sense because you're in Florida.
Yes. Yeah, it's their like rapid development lab where they're doing all kinds of cool stuff. I'm not sure if I can talk about anything.
You can. You didn't sign any documents, did you? It's just NASA.
I didn't sign any documents.
Well, there you go.
I want to be invited back, so I don't want to upset anyone.
Okay.
I can say that you know we're planning on trying to go to Mars at some point, right? And there's some cool stuff in there that they're working on related to that.
Sweet. That's good. Yeah,
that's a very safe thing to say because it's no secret that we're planning on going to Mars.
That part is not a secret, true.
Right.
So, hey, what about those people that have signed up and are ready to go and die there? Like spend the rest of their lives on Mars?
We were talking about this. I think that's a giant like reality TV scam.
I think
it's elaborate. It's elaborate, but I think they're going to like convince these people that they're training to go to Mars, and I think they're going to like stick them on a fake spaceship, think they're going there, and just like film the whole thing and just watch them totally like freak out and then start eating each other or something.
Duh. Yeah, that's an episode
that
of
would
30
be
Rock,
enough,
right?
For me to buy cable television just to watch that show.
I would watch that. I would totally watch that for sure. Of course, our sponsors this week are Audible at audiblepodcast.com/tyos and Lynda at lynda.com/tyos. We'll talk more about them as we get into it, and we probably should get into it, right? Because we've been spending the last half hour talking about chicken eggs and rocket
and
ships.
And Mars reality shows.
Yeah, which is pretty fun, admittedly. But I think the people are here for the iOS stuff, right?
We haven't talked enough about the space stuff. I gave a presentation at NASA, too.
Yeah?
See, that is so cool.
That is cool.
Although it was a bit intimidating thinking that I'm going to be talking to a bunch of rocket scientists, like, literally.
Yeah. I bet they were all really cool.
They drink their beer one fist at a time, just like us.
And by all accounts, they drink a lot of beer.
And I was in what was called the ONC building, and now it's called the Neil Armstrong building.
Oh, they changed it.
Yeah. There was an actual Neil Armstrong spacesuit, like, in the lobby. That was probably
cool.
That's really cool thing.
Cool. That's awesome. I've been in there before. I saw that's where the astronauts come out. They call it the Astronaut Hotel.
Right.
And that's where they come out before the or on their way to the launch. They hop in the Astrovan at that spot.
Yeah.
That's where they live too.
That whole trip was cool. And then we did a whole tour of the Mercury and Gemini programs. So I got to go, like, actually stand on the launch pad where they fired the Apollo 1.
Nice. Well, they didn't.
You posted a photo of that, which is really cool.
You did? I didn't see any photos. Yeah. I suck.
They fired it there. And then, you know, of course, the tragedy happened. So
yes.
It's kind of an awful history, but it was, like, daunting to be, like, standing there.
Yeah. That is
the whole
thing.
The whole experience was awesome. You know, and then I got to hang out in Hogsmeade and have butterbeer and go to Diagon Alley. So
cool.
That's just too damn awesome.
Florida is a magical place.
Yeah, although I don't want to offend anybody, but Orlando, I could be happy not going there ever again.
What does Dave call that place? The
And no offense to the people who love and live in Orlando, it's just me. I can't handle traffic and crowds and, like, waiting forever. And just because of the sheer density of the amusement parks in that area, you know, it's all tourists. I think people in Florida know this for the most part, right? It's all tourists and everything's, like, jammed up and you can't get anywhere. And it was very frustrating being there.
You know, my one experience in Orlando, it might as well have been on Mars because flew into Orlando. Disney picked us up in their buses.
Right.
Drove us out to their resort and never left the resort. At the end of the trip, they checked our luggage for us, loaded us on buses, took us back to the airport. And my experience in Orlando doesn't count. It wasn't reality.
But I mean, you probably had this, like, we were at a Disney hotel as well. And the problem was, like, we got in, it was late. We just wanted to get some food. And we go to, like, the one, like, restaurant facility they had on this property. And it was just, like, you couldn't even walk in. And granted, we were on a three-day weekend, so that was adding to the whole chaos. But it's just, like, it was a nightmare. It was just, like, I don't like being in crowds like that. So it wasn't fun.
Yeah. I totally get that.
Yeah. Okay. Well, let's move from Orlando nightmares.
See you guys next week.
Yeah. Let's talk about something happy and something that's making me more and more excited every day, which is the Apple Watch. Because I don't know, it just seems magical. I want to watch the video again where the guy from Palm? Where'd that guy come from? I can't remember. The watch guy who presented it with the purple shirt and the glasses.
Oh. Yeah, he was from Palm, as I recall.
Was it Palm? Okay. Yeah, he knew what was up. Anyway, I got to check that thing out, him showing it again, because it's cool. But the news today is that Apple is inviting developers to Cupertino to finish up their WatchKit apps.
Woo-hoo. That means we got to be getting close to actually a presentation, right? Because those are the guys they're going to bring up.
Yeah, those are the guys. Those are the guys.
Like, look, we developed this awesome thing in 2 days.
Yeah.
With Apple's help.
Right, with Apple's help, just breathing down our necks the entire time. Yeah, the developers invited by Apple range from those behind titles for sports applications and productivity software. And I guess they've been also meeting with banks to work on WatchKit apps. And what else? Germany banks as well. So Apple Pay in foreign banks is probably around the corner. And there were some interesting things said by the developers. They said that the digital crown is really nice, which the more I think about it, initially I was like, oh, why would you want to do that as your input source? But then I realized, oh, you know, it's kind of strapped down to one arm and then I'm doing it with my other hand. And it seems like it'll probably make sense. And if the developers think that it works out, then hey, maybe
then
it's
that's
working
a good
out.
Sign.
Yeah. They say that Force Touch takes time to get used to. Another developer said that the Taptic vibrating feature is not as impressive as expected, but still another developer called it super impressive. So that,
you know,
kind of
everyone
ranges.
I've talked to that got to feel the Taptic feedback thing from the initial presentation thought it was cool.
Good. I'm expecting it to be cool, especially the whole you know, walking directions.
Yeah,
that sounds
they said
awesome.
It took a little bit of getting used to. And at first it was a little bit startling because it felt like someone walked up and touched you.
Yeah, yeah. And that's what they kept saying is the point of the Taptic engine, the way they designed it, was so it just felt like someone was tapping you on the wrist.
Yeah, and once I got used to it, then it was cool.
Does anybody else worry about the long-term ramifications of like all the stuff that we are going to suddenly have strapped to us that is buzzing and vibrating? And
you mean like psychologically or like...
Well, I think we know what the ultimate outcome is of that because we've all seen the Borg try and take over Earth.
I already get like the ghost vibration thing all the time.
Oh,
right?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, ghost vibrations from my phone in my pocket.
And that's funny because the ghost vibrations are often stronger than the real vibrations.
Yeah. And now, you know, the more and more stuff, you start to become desensitized to it, which to me then... totally, you know, negates the rationale for having it.
Yeah, and if a killer is coming up on you and he vibrates at you, you'd expect to hear that, but now that you're desensitized to it, you're going to be murdered.
No, but I mean, I think I constantly I even miss notifications now, I think, from my phone, because I'm sure that they have.
I totally do.
Take the phone out of my pocket and like there's a bunch of notifications like, well, I know this thing vibrated, but I probably was totally desensitized to it.
I get that too. I also... Oh, I put my phone in vibrate mode when I go to bed.
Right.
And I'll be laying in bed and I'll wake up because I hear the ding of a text message come in. But there was no text message. And of course there was no ding because it was in vibrate mode.
Yeah, I have a similar story where I put my phone in vibrate and I slept through the podcast yesterday.
You guys don't use Do Not Disturb? I just have mine auto set.
I don't do that. It's one of those things.
I used to use Do Not Disturb all the time. And there was a reason why I stopped. And the funny thing is now I don't remember why that was. At the time it was very valid.
For me it was my sleepy time kind of fluctuated a bit. Like versus like if they gave you a calendar, maybe weekdays, sleepy time is this, and then
oh, I see what you're saying. Yeah, because you can only have the one setting.
Yeah, then I would probably do.
I think
do
that's
auto
what
thing.
It was. Is because on weekends when my sleep pattern is different, I was getting woken up at like 6:30 in the morning by text messages.
Yeah, that's not good.
Yeah,
I'm pretty consistent, so it works for me, I guess.
Yeah, silence. I'm looking at this scheduled. Maybe they changed it. Nope. From time to time, they haven't.
It's either that's like an on or off thing.
Well, and that's the one thing. Now, I was wondering the other day if you have it on Do Not Disturb, but you also have it on Vibrate. I really like the feature of, you know, if mom calls three times in a row because there's some kind of dog emergency, then it'll come through, but if you're on vibrate, will it come through if you're on Do Not Disturb? Because that's a neat feature. I like that feature, but I'm thinking that it won't. I'm thinking it'll then just vibrate and it still won't come through. We may have to do an experiment to validate that assumption.
I think it will depend upon if the person you've set up is a VIP, because doesn't VIP sort of push?
Well, that's what I mean. That's what I mean. Yeah. So you say, okay, mom is one of the people who matter, and then I don't know.
As well, she should be.
At least she says that she is. But
back to the Apple Watch.
Yeah. So the Apple has, did we get off the rails?
Apple Watch. Yeah. I think the next thing is the health features that were dropped.
Yeah. So there were we were talking that there might be 10 features, 10 different sensors to track health and fitness in the Apple Watch when we first started talking about it. And now I guess you could say that, well, you got the accelerometer in there. That's one. So motion sort of data. And then you've got the heart rate monitor. And that's really, I mean, as far as sensors go, I think that's it. It's just
those I think qualify as fitness sensors, not health sensors.
Okay. Yeah. And I think that a lot of it was talking about oxygenation levels and that sort of thing.
Right. Well, and there was also like EKG sensors, right?
EKG, potential blood glucose.
Right. Sensors through skin contact.
Yeah. And
but that
so
was
a
all
lot of
rumored
that
stuff, right? So all we're talking about is stuff that they were rumored to be working on and probably were working on. And nothing has changed from what Apple demoed, though, right? Like they haven't removed any of the technology that they've announced.
Yeah.
That is correct.
It's just a matter of Wall Street Journal putting out a story saying that, yes, indeed, they were working on these features, but they obviously did not make it.
Didn't make it. So version two. A reason why I doubt I'm going to be buying the more expensive Apple Watch.
You mean the, what is it? The stainless steel? You're not getting the edition. And I'll tell you why in a minute.
No, I'm not getting the edition.
But the
it's going to depend on the price differential.
What is it
really
called?
I think if it comes in under $500, I'll probably get. Huh?
There's the Sport, and then there's what's the next tier up called?
Just called Apple Watch.
Oh. Okay.
It's Apple Watch Sport, Apple Watch Edition.
Oh, I see. Okay. I thought that the Apple Watch Sport was going to be the cheaper version.
It is.
So why do they have it listed Apple Watch, Apple Watch Sport, Apple Watch Edition on the webpage? There's a lot of uncertainty clouding the whole Apple Watch situation vis-a-vis pricing.
I mean,
I want
the stainless and sapphire one.
Oh, yeah.
But
so nice.
But again, it's going to be the price. If it's 500 or less, I may go for it. If it's more than 500, that's going to be a tough call on a version one product.
You know, I'm pretty set on the Sport.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't have the sapphire glass. And on first glance, that might seem kind of weird.
Yeah.
But considering I am more active and I will be using this for fitness related stuff outdoors, hiking and mountain climbing and snowshoeing and all that stuff, I want the material that's less likely to shatter.
Shatter if you could, like,
if I smack it into a rock. I'd rather have a scratched surface than a shattered surface.
Now, the one thing that I am wondering about, because, and I think we talked about it before, is the water resistance.
There is none.
Well, it is water resistant, right?
Well, splash resistant.
Splash.
I mean,
so like if someone throws a wine at you because you're on a reality TV show, then it'll be fine.
Right. But if you jump in the pool with it, like I'm probably apt to do.
Yeah.
I think all bets are off.
Oh, man. Because I'd love to.
My guess is it'll probably be okay in the rain.
Uh-huh.
Right.
But notice I'm saying probably.
Yeah, I don't think basically you can't submerge it.
Because I need a watch. The only time that I'm thinking I want a watch is when I go out surfing, because I at some point need to get on with my life and I need
to
know what time is.
You're going to have to put one of your hands in a plastic bag now, aren't you?
I guess that's the only solution. Some like gaffing tape and a Ziploc.
Yep.
Okay.
Why they can't just dip this thing in Aquapel and be done with it?
Do it, yeah.
Beyond me.
Make it happen, Apple. Come on. You know, that's the other thing that I was going to ask is, do you guys think that we're going to see, you know, in the way that they did with the iPhone, where originally supposedly the screen was going to be plastic covered, and then they came out a couple months later saying, "Hey, we're gonna do glass." Do you think maybe they'll do sapphire on all of them?
No.
It does seem kind of like a more luxury feature.
Well, I don't even think it's luxury.
Thing, like Jeff's saying, yeah.
It is functional. Yeah, I guess there is that.
I think that's what it's all about.
They're defining the sport. I mean, again, if you're a mountain biker, right, and you go down hard with a sapphire glass screen, you know, and hit a rock,
it's going to shatter.
It's going to shatter. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, you know, sport is for the active people who are, you know, where that watch might get smashed against a surface or hit with a, you know, a baseball or, you know, who knows? I mean,
yep. And
it's the impact resistance.
Totally.
And I've been hit by cars that weren't paying attention when I'm on my bike. Geez, it was 3 times in 1 year.
Yikes, dude.
And yeah, I know. So I am so not a sapphire candidate.
What are the properties of, in terms of like sweat resistance, is aluminum also better than stainless? Or I would think it wouldn't matter, right? Stainless should be pretty good against sweat.
Stainless should be great against sweat.
Okay. Yeah. So that doesn't matter. So it's just a probably cheaper, lighter material, I guess.
Yeah, I like the idea of something that's lighter. And I know we're probably talking grams.
Right.
But when you keep adding up grams over all your equipment, over time, that suddenly becomes a significant amount of weight.
Yeah. You've got one arm that's bigger than the other.
Yeah.
I don't quite that, but yeah, okay.
You're like ripped out on the left and nothing on the right.
Yeah.
John Gruber had a nice article talking about his obsession with trying to come up with pricing for the mm-hmm. Apple Watch stuff. It's an interesting read because he really, truly did obsess over this stuff. And I think the most interesting bit of info is his initial impression of the Apple Watch Edition price was $5,000. And I think a lot of people balked at that. And now he's thinking that $10,000 is going to be the starting price on the Apple Watch Edition, and $20,000 is not out of the question if you want to link it up with a so you get your gold Apple Watch and then you get some kind of fancy like rose gold wrist
band
for it. Yeah.
Are we prepared for how bad that? I mean, we thought like theft of iPods and iPhones was
like
bad.
model selection.
What
you're talking about, combinations like which iPhone do you want? You want the Verizon?
No. I'm talking about
having them getting stolen.
Yeah, remember how you know New York and the subway had a rampant theft of, you know, iDevices, and you know we're talking about
the guy in Colorado where he had the cord from the bag wrapped around his wrist. Yep. And when the bad guys grabbed the bag and pulled it out of his hands, it completely took the skin off to the bone.
They're going to have they're going to have like armed guards, like walking people out to their cars at malls if they're buying $10,000 watches and walking out of an Apple store.
Which is crazy because you don't see that outside high-end watch stores.
I mean, they have armed security guards walking around those places, though.
Yes, but I mean escorts to take you back out to your car after you buy your watch.
Yeah, back to your like SLK or whatever. But you know the thing about it is Apple already has a handle on this sort of tech, right? With the iPhones, it seems as though the thefts are going down, at least to some extent.
Something that's an $800 product, not a $10,000-$20,000 product.
Sure. Okay. So in one regard, you can say Apple is going to put some kind of activation lock on that thing. Well, okay. Now you got the activation lock. Let's say you just stole a $20,000 Apple Watch, but it's locked. It's activation locked, and you can't use it as an Apple Watch.
There's no activation on it.
We don't know that. Maybe
there
will be
cellular. data going to that thing. It connects to an iPhone, right?
I get that.
Yeah,
I get
that. iPhone.
You pair it to an iPhone, but the iPhone can be the middleman to that situation. I'm not saying that I know one way or the other, but okay. I think it's certainly one of those things. If you look at the Apple Pay
the
situation,
there's $900 of gold value in the case.
It's $900. That's true. So you can say, yes, it is a $20,000 watch, but there's $900 worth of gold. There is a giant price difference between those two things, but it is $900. And if you need that sweet, sweet crack, then, you know, it's not a big deal.
you're gonna melt down the watch you just stole, and
right,
and yeah.
Get your fix.
And I'm saying this is I'm predicting it's gonna. There's gonna be some stories. I don't know how. I mean, Apple's obviously got to be thinking about this, and they have to have a way to handle this. But I mean, people get held up for their. I guess
here's
the thing: the media is gonna have a field day with it, and the reality of it is people get held up for their high end watches all the time, but. There's going to be more of a media focus and attention on this, even though it's probably not going to be.
It's probably not going to be
that rampant, but it's going to seem rampant once the media starts going, oh, everybody's getting their Apple Gold Edition watches, Apple watches stolen.
Yeah, and by everybody, we mean like two people in some crazy town that just need to spend that much money on a watch and don't know how to. Like keep their stuff on the DL because they're buying an Apple Watch at an Apple store in like the ghetto.
But let's face it too. If you're gonna buy an edition Apple Watch, you're buying it for the flash.
Of course you are. Yeah, but so ultimately, it's as you were saying, Jeff. It's no different than buying any other luxury high end watch. It's the same situation. But yes, the media is going to totally blow it out of proportion.
I'm waiting for the aftermarket. Covers for Apple Watch
to make it look like a garbage watch.
Yeah, to make it look like some other junk watch.
Yeah, to make it look like a Seiko.
No one's
going to
want
to
do that.
Nobody's going to want to do that because there's no point in buying
it. Yeah, because you want to show off. Look, I've got a Apple edition.
Well, maybe you're one of those people who only wants to show off your Apple Watch at like the Riddler's ball or something. So maybe you make it look like a garbage watch every other time, and then you know when you go to the fancy event, then you take the pieces of like. Rotten cottage cheese off your watch and show it off.
Yeah,
but okay. So this is
expensive watch to the Riddler's ball. We already know he's a mastermind criminal. He's going to steal it.
Yeah, you don't want to. Yeah, that's a good point. You don't want to bring it to the Riddler's ball.
How great a buildup is Apple not announcing pricing on the Apple watches for them in terms of like everybody's like just. Waiting on
it's total crystal ball insanity. I think we're missing the bigger point here. So yes, there's going to be an insanely expensive Apple Watch edition that you're only going to see like crazy VC guys wearing in the valley. But
it's the Hollywood watch. It's celebrities, sports stars. You know, they're all going to have them.
Yeah, but I think more important, more relevant for the average Joe is the seemingly slew a crazy amount of choices we're going to have with this thing. And I think that has come out in several different ways. One, if you actually watch the Apple Watch unveiling video again and listen to how excited Johnny Ive is about the fact that there are like a billion different combinations you can get for this thing. He's done articles recently talking about the Apple Watch and how, I don't have it in the show notes, but how there's a difference between people being okay with having a phone that every other person has. It looks exactly the same. However, people don't want to have that same situation going on with something they wear. I think in the end, you're going to realize that Johnny Ive has just gone absolutely bananas with designing different combinations for the Apple Watch. And I think it's cool. I think it'll work out. I don't think it's one of those situations where with the iPhone, you say, okay, well, there's the Verizon, there's the AT&T, and there's the Sprint version, and there are different sizes and different screen sizes and different colors and all this stuff. And it's like a pain in the butt to figure out. It's going to be like, I want the Apple Watch. Okay, which size do you want? Cool. And I want the gold one. All right. Figure out the band and everything. It's going to be like choosing colors rather than choosing confusing tech, right? I think it's going to be one of those things where it is a fashion situation. And there are going to be those people who just say, I want the Apple Watch, give me the cheap one, and we're on our way. But I think as far as the combination stuff goes, I think it will be, Apple will probably have some kind of easy configurations thing going on their website where you say, I want the Apple Watch. And then you say, okay, well, I want this color and that color. And the one thing that, I think we talked about at some point early on was we were looking at, I think with the Apple Watch Edition, there were different, colors on the sides of the, what is it called? The
digital crown.
Yeah, the crown. Yeah. So some had like black, some had red, some had gold, and
white.
Yeah, all of that stuff. And Louis Mancha has a where is that thing? I know that Gruber linked to it in his thing. But there's a giant grid where he believes the different combinations. Here we go. Yeah. So you can. Did you see this? I didn't put it in the
show. No, but one thing I had forgotten about was that there's actually two metal colors in each line.
Yes, there's the space gray and there's the non-space.
Well, there's silver aluminum, space gray aluminum in the sport edition. And then in the stainless, you've got stainless steel and space black stainless steel.
Yeah. No,
and then in the gold, you've got 18 karat yellow gold or 18 karat rose gold.
Yes. And I've been told that my girlfriend wants the rose gold.
Good luck with that.
Yeah, hi.
How many kidneys can you sell?
That'll be the engagement watch, I think.
I'm thinking so.
If that happens. But so it looks cool. Now, as far as, I mean, there are tons. There's link bracelet, Milanese loop. There's a rose gray modern buckle, bright red modern buckle. Leather loop, classic buckle, sports band, all this, and different types of those within that category. So I think based on this grid, and I'll send you guys the link here. It's freaking Skype. Here you go. It looks like he's piecing this together, and of course everybody's pulling this information out of their butts. But it seems as though there are going to be specific combinations you can purchase, and these are in the vein of these are the combinations that they have decided look best together, right? So you don't want to get your nasty sports band with your sweet gold watch. Although I guess they are selling a special version of the sports band, but you don't want to get the wrong color with your gold Apple Watch. So I think they're going to be selling them in very specific combinations. However, it seems as though all of the bands will be interchangeable with.
I wouldn't see any reason why they wouldn't be. And I think it's going to be an upsell at the store.
Well, yeah. And that was one of those things that Gruber was saying, that there are most certainly going to be situations where your band is going to cost more than the watch itself. If you get the cheapo watch and you get the like the link bracelet, the link bracelet's probably going to cost more than the watch.
Oh, no.
Oh, the link bracelet, the one that's like, what did Brian Chaffin call it? Milanese?
The Milanese loop.
Yeah, the Milanese loop. Those used sell for between $500 and $700, and new can go upwards of $1,000. I'm pretty sure that's what he said.
Seriously?
Yeah. Yeah, it's one of those things that...
So Milanese loop is something different, but the link brace is just your standard, like, you know...
Yeah, but it's not going to be it's not going to be a cheapy link bracelet, right? It's going to be a high-quality one. And I think that's why Johnny Ive is so excited about this product, because he truly got to, like,
I'm getting
go
less
crazy
excited
with this stuff.
You know, if bands are going to cost $500, that's
insane. Well, the high-end ones, yeah. So Gruber, in his article, he did the bullet point list of, based on how Apple ordered the different bands on the website, he for the steel watch, he believes that it's from top to bottom increasing prices, going from sport band to classic buckle, Milanese loop, modern buckle, leather loop, link bracelet, and then the most expensive would be the black stainless steel link bracelet. So And I think that this is kind of all based on him doing a lot of research into the luxury watch market and realizing that, holy crap, people pay insane amounts of money for this stuff. So yes. I think on the low end, for the people who just want the sweet tech, they're going to get the sport band or maybe something a little bit nicer. But for people who want to
blow up in Apple's face,
I don't know that I think there might be a little bit of confusion and backlash.
Watch people are there, and we're talking about a piece of technology. I think that's the other thing that no one's really discussing in a lot of detail is this thing is obsoleted in a year.
Yeah, this is true.
You know, a heirloom watch is not obsoleted in a year. It still functions as a watch.
Well, just don't upgrade your watch. You know, it's one of those situations where, yeah, the watch that came out in 1930 still ticks. If it still works, it still tells time, but may not be as modern. And in this situation, don't upgrade your Apple Watch if you want it to continue working.
I mean, at the very least, the battery technology is only going to last 3 years. So you could even argue, well, it'll still tell time 20 years from now. But yeah, can you get a battery for it?
Yeah, you got to wonder if you're... Well, you could probably go to Apple and same as you can with any other watch and go to the watchmaker and have them change out your battery for you.
I don't know.
It's going to be more expensive. It's going
to
be an interesting new situation.
Spend, you know, $500 for the watch and then another $800 for a strap.
Well, Apple may do a trade-in program. I mean, I'm just tossing stuff out here.
No, I know we've talked about all this stuff before, right? I mean, there's ways to handle this, but I mean,
yeah, swap out body components.
But I mean, am I wrong, Jeff? It seems like there are definitely a lot of. I mean, if you're a watch person, this is candy for you.
I think for many serious watch people, this will be candy for them.
But how big a market is serious watch people?
I think it's pretty big. I think it's bigger than you realize.
It is going to be. They're fans who own iPhones and iPods, and a lot of those people aren't watch people. And I don't think this is going to make
people
them
are going
to
buy sport
people.
And regular. And I think most people are going to buy the sport. Now, and by most, I mean more than half.
Unless Apple is counting on, you know, they're going to take the high end of the band market and they're going to open it up. I mean, it hasn't been clear. Are they going to let third parties make compatible bands as accessories, or are they
haven't heard anything about that.
Yeah.
I think I don't know if it was in Gruber's article or another one, but I saw estimates of the expected sales of the watch are going to be half are going to be the sport, a third are going to be the Apple Watch, and the rest is going to be like the last sixth is going to be edition watches. And
okay, so here's an example. So I've heard a bunch of people say they want to get the Apple Watch Sport or what otherwise, but they don't want the clasp on the band, right? Because they want to be able to continue to wear it as they work on their Mac, and they're worried about the clasp scratching the surface of their MacBook Pro, what have you.
Sure, sure.
So
makes
most
sense.
Of those folks are like, well, then I'm probably going to go for the leather loop because there's, you know, it's just soft leather then under that. So if Apple comes out and says, okay, here's the sport, it's $349. Oh, and the leather loop is another $349.
I think that would
gravy.
Be more like a $70 add-on.
Yeah. We'll have to see. I mean, a lot of
which is still going to make a lot of people balk because we're talking about people whose previous watch was a Timex Ironman Triathlon that cost them $35.
Yeah, I don't know. It seems like a hard sell to me. They're going to have a hard time selling me if that's the way it is. You know, it'll be I'll take the sport one and live with it, and you're not getting another dime out of
it. I think most of the people are just going to do the sport edition, and I for some reason have tasted the Kool-Aid, and it's good Kool-Aid, and I think that people are going to go for this. They're going to enjoy it, and you're going to see a lot of people getting the cheapest version, but maybe 6 months down the line, they're going to say, I want to spruce up my Apple Watch and get a new band for it and go for it that way.
I think I'm going bare minimum, and I'm going to wait for version 2. I'm going to wait for this to pan out to see what happens.
Do it.
I think there's too many questions in my mind at this point as to, you know, how this is going to work out.
So interesting. I feel like you were on the bandwagon initially, and I was way off of it, and now we've completely changed.
Doing the experiment. I'm just, you know, I'm optimistic about it, just cautiously, because, again, I think that I'm going to want to upgrade, and I don't know if I want to spend all of my money. You know, this sort of feels like the original iPhone. It was very, very expensive. A lot of people jumped on very early, so I think Apple's going to get that. But then there was a lot of people that waited a very long time before they jumped in, you know, for prices and stuff to come down. So, you know, it's typical stuff. This isn't anything new, right? Apple's always going to come out and shoot at the very, very high end and then let the buzz and the popularity catch on and then start to bring out options that address other parts of the market. They've always done this. They've always gone after the early adopters, the high end, and there should be no reason they shouldn't do that. So none of this should really surprise me, and I guess it makes sense from that perspective. But, you know, being a fan of somebody who wants to jump in on this, it's going to be a hard sell for me because, you know, I have other things that I think are more, from a technology standpoint, that are more important for me to spend my money on. Like I'm going to need to upgrade my MacBook here pretty soon, and I'd rather hold aside some of that money and not get a watch and spend it on, you know, a better processor or more, you know, flash memory when I go to buy my MacBook Pro. So,
yeah,
there you have it. We'll see. I could totally change my mind, which I've done before too.
That's the name of the game. Okay, so we have a lot more to talk about. We're going to do the Apple Car because we'll just say that it's going to run iOS. Why don't we? We'll just pretend
I'm not saying that.
You're not going to be driving it if it does. So we're going to talk about our sponsor this week, which is Audible at audiblepodcast.com/Tyos. And if you don't know Audible by now, they're the place where you're going to go to get an audiobook. And because they have over 150,000 titles to choose from fiction to nonfiction, bestsellers, self-help. I mean, pretty much anything that you can think of if you're like me and you have a lot of stuff going on all the time. You think, man, I would love to read a book, but I just don't have the time to sit down and crank through it. And, you know, a lot of times that first couple chapters is the hardest to get through. And then it starts picking up and you're really into it, but it's getting through those first couple chapters. And that's one of the reasons why I like Audible, because you can just sit there, you can hang out, take a little break from life. Maybe you're driving in the car and just have it read to you. And maybe you are aspirational and you think, okay, I'm going to listen to the first couple chapters, but then I'm going to pick up the book and actually read it and use my brain to like meditate on this book. So because Audible is now owned by Amazon, you can get the audiobook. And then because most of these books these days have Whisper Sync, it's really cool. It syncs the actual spot you're in with the audiobook to the ebook. So you can just like listen to the audiobook for a little while and then sit down and read the actual text and go back and forth, and it keeps track of it for you, which is really cool. It's so neat. So there are free apps for iPhone, iPad, Android, Windows Phone, everything you can think of. You can get access to everything. And one of my favorite things about Audible, I've been a member for like, I don't know, since 2006 or something like that. And I have all of my books, every book that I've ever gotten through Audible is available to me anytime, forever and ever. And that is super cool. So it's not like streaming or anything like that. You don't have to continue paying to keep getting access to these. You just have them. Once you have them, they're available to you whenever you need to. So they don't even have to take up space on your phone. You can just download them through the app whenever you want to. It's awesome. The app has great features like skipping forward and back. You know, if you miss something, you spaced out, or, you know, maybe kind of some kind of traffic situation happens, you just hit the little jump back 30-second thing. It's really nice. There's a sleep timer, so if you want to listen while you go to bed and just kind of have a 30-minute before bed read time, you can do that. So you've got those nice features in there as well. Let's see. You got the Whisper Sync. Oh, this is pretty cool. I didn't know about this. But so if you have the Kindle Fire HD, you can actually listen and read at the same time. It'll highlight the text as you read along, which is very cool. I have not seen that, but that sounds awesome. Chapter navigation, all that stuff. So I want to mention this before I talk about some cool books to check out. Obviously, you get a free audiobook of your choice and a 30-day trial membership by going to audiblepodcast.com/Tyos. That's just free. If you haven't checked out Audible, just go do it. Get a book. They have like all of them. So check that out. And the best part is they have the great listen guarantee. So that means if you get a book, you think it's going to be awesome, and you get like a quarter of the way through it, and you're like, this book kind of stinks, I want to get a different one, you can just tell them. There's a like automated feature for that. You don't even have to call them and wait on support for a half an hour. You just tell them like, hey, I don't like this one, I want to get a different one. They have no problem with it. And there's like a giant amount of time where you can actually make that happen. So they're awesome. Some awesome books that they have on there. Influx, which is the latest Daniel Suarez. So good. Have you guys checked that out?
No, I have not.
Mm-mm.
I think I listened to the entire thing through Audible. I might have read maybe one chapter, but for the most part, it was just like, I mean, the Daniel Suarez, he did Demon, and what was the one about the drones?
Yeah, the follow-up to Demon.
Yeah, oh man, that was...
And Demon was a fantastic book.
Yeah, and Influx is like right on par with with the Demon books for sure. It's you've got to check it out. It's basically the idea is in the future. Well, not even in the future. Right now, there's extreme technology that has been invented, like nuclear fusion, cures for cancer, anti-gravity, all this kind of stuff has been invented and exists. However, the government thinks that humanity's not ready for it, so they keep it under lock and key. And so it's awesome. Gone Girl, of course, that great movie. I checked out the book after I watched the movie, so I would recommend. It's one of those things where if you know the secret to the situation, then it kind of ruins it a little bit. But so if you haven't seen the movie yet, definitely check out the book. Hitchhiker's Guide, The Martian. That's going to be turned into a Ridley Scott movie
this November.
I'm so excited for that. Have you read? You read the book?
Oh my God, yes.
It read as a movie as you were going through it. I couldn't put it down.
Yeah.
The Divergent trilogy, I didn't realize that Divergent was going to be cool, but then I checked it out, and it is. So I need to get on the next two books because I watched the first movie, and I've got to check that out. That's on Audible. Steve Jobs biography, A Brief History of Time by Stephen Hawking. I need to check that out because I just watched the Stephen Hawking movie. Jurassic Park, of course. You've got to read Jurassic Park if you care at all about Jurassic Park, and especially with the movie coming out, Jurassic World, later this year. Freakonomics, 50 Shades of Grey, Hunger Games, all that stuff. Check it out. Audiblepodcast.com/Tyos. They're great. We thank them so much for their support of this Week in Tech. Yeah. The iOS show.
That's so cute how you can't remember the name of
Yo, what show is this? Is this macOS Ken? Is this the MacCast with Adam Christensen? Who is Adam Christensen?
He's just this guy.
I hear he does a good job with this podcast.
Yeah. I hear he's dreamy.
Yeah, that's what I hear. Uh-huh. He does cool presentations at NASA.
There you go.
I saw that picture, by the way. It looks awesome. Did they enjoy it? Did they like? I was kind of wondering if there would be anybody who uses Macs other than Skip at NASA, because
there was a lot of participation. Yeah, a lot of iPhones. I guess they swapped out Blackberries for iPhones. So,
oh, cool. Yeah, yep. Good times. So
yeah, we did a little workflow stuff.
Very good. So you did productivity.
Yep.
Nice. Very nice.
Yeah.
So Apple seems like, according to 9to5 Mac and Recode, they're going to be doing iOS 8.3 and iOS 9 beta testing, public beta testing.
Cool.
Yeah, it is cool.
It's cool all the way up until the average person decides they're going to install it on their iPhone, and right. At some point their iPhone doesn't work right.
South.
There is that, yeah.
I haven't even, I'm in the developer program and 8.3 is available, but it's, you know, it's the first version. I don't usually jump in till it's almost to gold master. So like I am running 8.2 beta 5. And even there, I found some things that are a little, you know, wonky that late in the development cycle.
Oh,
so.
Yeah. I totally forgot. I forgot that we have like 8.2 out and 8.3, and those are... For some reason, I assumed that we were on 8.2, but we're not. We're still on 8.1.3.
Right.
Yeah, that's fun.
Yeah, I mean, 8.2, I would assume, is getting close to being a release candidate. But, you know, 8.3, I'm not going to jump on because they just put it out, which means that it's probably, you know, I haven't heard one way or the other, but I would assume it's fairly buggy.
Yeah?
Yeah. And so, like, I hope Apple does. It seems like when they open up the public beta stuff, it's much later in the development cycle. So hopefully it's much more stable.
That's what I would assume, yeah.
Trying to get feedback on finishing up the last few bugs, you know, trying to include more eyeballs on, you know, so they can find that weird stuff that in the past has slipped out. So I admire Apple for doing it, but I'm totally with you, Jeff. You know, it's like, you got to caution people. You got to be like, you know, you are still running beta software. You're on the cutting edge. There's going to be bugs and issues. You know, you may have to wipe and restore your device. And if you're like me, I hate doing that.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. When I run iOS betas, it goes on my iPad mini.
Yeah.
Because that's the machine for me that's the least painful if I have to do a nuke and pave.
Yeah.
Well, and it's also one of those things you have to make sure that you have a backup before you update, right? Because if you then you think, okay, I just backed up and it'll be fine, that backup from the beta OS is not going to restore down to the earlier OS.
Well, and you generally typically can't roll back anyway.
You can, assuming they're signing it, and they're going to still sign it if it's true. You're on the beta version and you want to go back. So
it's not an easy process, you know.
It's not just fun.
It's not for everyone, but I mean, it's cool that they're opening it up because I think in the long run it will help them make better software. And like if you ran the Yosemite beta, you know, they have that little feedback app that automatically gets installed, so they make it real easy for you to report bugs and things like that. And so hopefully they're getting good response with those public betas. If they're expanding it to iOS, I would have to assume that they are.
Well, so Yosemite, it was the first 1 million people who registered. 9to5Mac is saying that for the iOS beta, it's going to be the first 100,000 people.
So that's pretty limited.
Yeah. And I think that's good.
That's probably a smart move.
That's good. So it's going to allow the people who aren't developers, but who are technically minded and follow this stuff closely, who ostensibly understand that this is beta and you shouldn't, you're not in for fun times the whole way through.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the first time when you're running beta software and the first time you launch, you know, your favorite critical app and it doesn't run or it crashes, you know, that's extremely frustrating.
Yeah. Then that's why I don't put I very rarely have ever put the beta software on my iPhone. It's always gone on my iPad. And a lot of times it's not as fun because a lot of the features are phone only features. But I mean, if you can't make a phone call or you can't send that text message or like navigate to where you need to go, that's totally screwing up your life. So just keep that in mind when this does come about. So, and I wonder if they're going to limit it per device. You know, so it's going to be 100,000 devices as opposed to like 100,000 people with maybe two or three devices kind of thing.
That's a good question.
Yeah. I would imagine they'll probably just say 100,000 people. And then if you have two devices, go ahead. We'll see. It'll be interesting how they actually put that out there because it's something they've never done before. And I wonder if they're going to, I guess they're going to do it through their test flight thing. I think that's what 9to5 said.
That would make sense.
Yeah. I can't see it in here, but yeah. Shall we talk about Apple Car?
Vroom, vroom.
No, it's not going to go vroom, vroom. It's going to go buzz, buzz because it's electric, right?
Okay, metaphorical vroom, vroom.
Well, they're probably going to have to put speakers in there, right? Because people complain about how they're silent.
Isn't that what they do on the Tesla?
I don't think so, do they?
No.
Oh. There was somebody's electric car they put in fake like engine revving sounds.
I would guess like it was Prius.
The Prius?
You know, there's enough Priuses, Prii in Boulder that I encounter them pretty much every day. None of them are making artificial vroom vroom sounds.
I mean, they do make real
car
noises.
I don't think you hear it outside.
Well, I know BMW does.
Oh, yes.
For inside the car.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, because they're BMW and they have to. So this week, Reuters, they say that Apple is indeed working on their project. So we've talked that they're working on an automobile project. It's pretty clear at this point. However, there was some discussion as to whether they're going to do self-driving implementation in these cars. And Reuters believes that they will. I believe that they will. It's the next wave of automobiles, right? I mean, that's just the future of driving tech. I can't imagine that they wouldn't have some self-driving features. Tesla has self-driving features out right now with the Model S. They do. It's limited in certain ways. So they have, as far as I've seen, they have a smart cruise control. So you hop on the highway and you say, right, I want to go 80 or whatever. And then you're in the lane, but for some reason, the car in front of you is going like 20 miles under or whatever,
right,
or maybe they're driving the speed limit and you want to speed. But it's going to see that with radar. It's going to understand what's going on and it's going to slow down. And you have settings to say, I want to be like three car lengths behind, keep me back there. And then, okay, if you want to change lanes, you hit your little blinker and then it checks around for you and then changes the lanes for you. It does all the more nuanced stuff of driving, and they're working to continue toward autonomous driving.
Sure.
There,
I wish we could stop doing this, because this is like the overuse of the word drone to refer to anything that's like a quad or multi-rotor helicopter.
Yeah,
that's flying,
yeah,
around.
And most aren't actually drones.
Correct.
So quadcopters are not drones.
No. And you know, to me, a drone is something where you have a camera system and maybe a head, you know, a VR or a screen that's being used to fly that thing, not line of sight. And, you know, definitely needs to have a camera on it. But, you know, we keep saying self-driving car, and I think that's ultimately where we're going to get to. But I think to call these things self-driving cars initially is not correct. It's more like computer-assisted driving.
I like that.
I think it's a better terminology. Or, you know, computer-enhanced driving, something like that. And we've had those kinds of systems in development for years.
You know,
starting with early things like, you know, rear camera detection or collision detection systems that'll, you know, trigger braking systems and stuff like that. So those things are getting more and more advanced. So there's a progression going on here. So yes, Apple's looking into self-driving technologies, but more, it's probably better to say computer-aided technologies or computer-assisted driving technologies, you know, and we're with the ultimate goal of getting to full autonomous driving.
Right. And I think it's one of those situations where it's more, the software is the most complex part,
right?
So the you're going to have a version one when the car comes out. It's going to have maybe just the whatever the base computer aided driving stuff is of 2020, which is when we're expecting to see an Apple car.
Right. Things like self-parking,
you know, smart cruise control, all that kind of stuff. But then because those sensors are in the car already, and we're seeing this a lot with many auto manufacturers, not just Tesla, but we're seeing it with a lot of them. As the software is perfected, you'll get updates and your car will become more and more autonomous as time goes on. And I think that is definitely the goal of these more modern projects that Apple and Tesla and Google are working on.
Everybody's resolved themselves at this point, because I was kind of gone last week, but it looks like, just based on the research that I've been doing over the last couple of days, pretty much everybody's resolved to the fact that Apple is working on some sort of car.
Yes. Absolutely.
Like, it seems not in dispute anymore.
Yeah. So there's the team that's been put together. Who's the guy who put it together? There's a guy at Apple who was given authority by Tim Cook last year for a thousand person team.
Is it Mark Newsom?
Steve Sadesky.
Steve Sadesky. That's right. Mark Newsom is Johnny Ive's friend, who is a designer and did the prototype concept car for Ford. That's right.
Yeah. And so there's a giant list. There's a profile of all these people. I bet a lot of these people never expected to be like profiled on 9to5 Mac as like calling them out and like, this person did this and they're probably working on this at Apple. But it's a very interesting read. If you go through some of this stuff, you could say, oh, okay, well, these guys have backgrounds in battery technology or marketing or this and that. But there are also people who have been taken from Tesla who were drivetrain engineers who worked on the power units, the actual motors themselves at Tesla. I mean, it's pretty clear that they are at least working on electric cars, like full on real cars.
Yeah. And it sounds like they're pretty committed to bringing something to market.
It seems like they
which
are.
Doesn't mean it will happen.
Yes.
But it's looking very likely.
And honestly, it makes sense to me. I think that Apple has probably realized that the consumer technology sector, where they've played traditionally vis-a-vis computers and tablets and watches and that sort of stuff, we've kind of gotten to the end of the big innovation stuff. And I think that they've realized, yes, there's TV, there's other stuff, including cars, that could possibly use a little bit of their magic fairy dust, and they're clearly trying their hand at that. And
yeah,
so we'll see if anything comes of that. But it seems like they are quite committed to determining if they can make something like that happen.
Well, and I think the other thing that isn't being discussed that people overlook too is the amount of crossover these technologies would have, even just as an R&D spend, as an R&D project, if Apple never makes a car, a lot of the technologies that they're going to be working on and experimenting with in this kind of project have crossover in and other applications into other aspects of Apple's business. So battery technologies, voice communication technologies,
materials.
You know, like all this stuff is cross-pollinated. So, you know, what these guys work on and discover and mess around with, even if Apple had to bail on the whole program and say, yep, nah, it didn't work out, we're not going to make a car, they haven't lost everything. You know, there's still value in the spend and in the exploration and in the experimentation.
Yeah, even in the software. If you just say that you're going to improve the CarPlay experience or what have you, or whatever that morphs into, there's that experience as well. Yeah. So,
and they could also take that and, you know, maybe they don't end up manufacturing the car, but maybe they find a partner at some point and it moves in that direction. But they're like, hey, we've got this team of people. We developed all these technologies. We want to partner with you and you know, for the manufacturing, production, what have you.
I think it's kind of interesting.
I think, yeah.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say, initially, I think their plan, as Apple's plan always is to do the whole thing themselves. But, you know, they could get to a point where, hey, maybe we don't want to do everything.
Yes.
Sure. But regardless of what comes out of this, there will be good things. It's either a cool car or really cool new technologies that are going to show up in our laptops and mobile devices.
Yeah, yeah. We've got more to talk about on this topic, but before we get to that, we have to just mention our friends at Lynda, at lynda.com/TIOSS, TIOSS. That's where you can get your free 10-day trial at Lynda, lynda.com. They are... that's the website where you go to learn pretty much anything technology wise. And they're the authority on all this stuff that, you know, from Photoshop to web development to making your first iOS app, development, design. They have 3D and animation, audio, music. So if you want to get into making music on your computer, it's not just technology either or software that they focus on. They also focus on, so if you want to look into design, they actually have design principles, design techniques, drawing, illustration, logo design, page layout, print production, typography. I mean, they just have everything that you need. It's one of those things where you could say, yeah, I could go to the community college and pick up some of this stuff, but Lynda's way cheaper and you can do it in your underwear.
You know, something related. I just wanted to find out because we were talking about cars. I'm like, I wonder if Lynda has anything on cars.
I did too. Yeah, what'd you find?
So they have a thing about, you know, iTunes in the car, in their iPod, iTunes Essential Training. But the really cool one is, I didn't even think about this, but they have all kinds of stuff on doing like videography and photography. So car mount systems.
Nice.
So if you're doing a film and you want to, you know, film and outside the car in car perspective. How do I build or use a car mount system? Or if I want to do, you know, road footage or what have you.
Holy crap.
So
that is so cool.
Yeah.
Yeah,
or animating a car if you're into 3D animation. Yeah, there's all kinds of stuff here.
All kinds of stuff. I mean, honestly, this is, it's great to have them as a sponsor because I have used them extensively in my life to learn. I mean, I built Appler because of Linda. I'm not sure Appler would exist without Linda because I learned my HTML chops there. I learned my JavaScript chops there, PHP, MySQL. They have Objective-C. They have the iOS SDK. You can learn Swift. They have iOS 8, iPhone, and iPad essential training. If you want to get more adept at using the terminal, if you want to learn how to use all that like sweet terminal foo, they have Unix for Mac OS 10 users, so you can like actually understand what the underpinnings are and get in there and make things happen. It's one of the most rewarding skills to be able to jump in the terminal and make something happen real quick. And you look like a total ninja when you do it in front of your friends. Like, how'd you know how to do that? You know how to do all that stuff? That's so cool. You can learn all of that stuff at lynda.com/TIOSS. You get a free 10-day trial. They have over 3,000 courses with more than 100,000 individual video tutorials. They're broken up into individual chapters, so it's really easy to find exactly the part that you want. So like for me, with the Unix for Mac OS 10 users, I know some of the file system basics and like working with files and directories and all that stuff, so I can just jump ahead to the spot that I want, where I can learn about like you know, directing input and output, configuring my working environment. And the best thing is you can jump around. You're not pinned down to any particular thing. You've got your 10 days, go nuts. Right. And you can even browse the entire directory of everything that they have without even having, the subscription yet. So you can figure out what you want and then be like, okay, I found some stuff that I want to check out, pull the cord, make it happen. Go to lynda.com/TIOSS and check it out. So they're awesome, and we're really glad they're supporting the show. So thank you to Lynda. So you guys were talking about the Apple wanting to own the whole process,
right? Mm-hmm.
with making a car. And that's kind of, they like doing that with everything that they're doing. And you would expect with making a car as well, you'd want to do that. So who's this guy? He's a former GM CEO.
I love this quote. This is my favorite quote.
They'd better think carefully if they want to get into the hardcore manufacturing. We take raw steel and turn it into a car. They have no idea what they're getting into.
Where did we hear this before?
Bones.
Hold on. Let me check my iPhone.
Did you find it yet, Jeff, on your iPhone?
Oh, look. It says iPhone.
Oh, okay. Interesting.
Apple has no idea what they're getting into making phones.
Well,
as soon as you hear someone in a market saying, we've been doing this for years, you don't know how difficult this is, you can't just come in here and suddenly take off and be like an expert. What it tells me is here's a market that's begging for Apple to step in and disrupt.
Absolutely.
Well, and what's funny is hearing that from a Ford CEO, because I'm GM. Pretty sure when Ford, like the guy, said, I'm going to mass produce automobiles, he was told very similar things.
This is true. Yeah. But this is GM. But yes.
Oh, GM. Sorry.
Same kind of.
You get the idea. Like, you know, sometimes you need like an old industry like that. You need somebody. And I mean, that's what Tesla did, right?
Absolutely.
I mean, nobody would make electric cars. And Tesla comes in and everybody's like, oh, they're crazy. They can't do it. Blah, blah, blah. And they make this, you know, incredible impact. It's not huge, right, in terms of the percentage. They're not, you know, if you look at all the cars sold, they're not, you know, in the highest realm, but immediately we see huge leaps and bounds in electric car technology, and you start getting Toyota and Chevy and all these other companies like off their butts going, wait, there's something here, we need to act. So
yeah, but you need to have someone that's willing to come in and disrupt a market to get everyone else
like
to
moving again.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's why we have the Chevy Volt, right? Because Tesla got in there and they started mixing stuff up. So, and yeah, like you said, Tesla was told the exact same stuff. And for what it's worth, it is a tough industry. It really is.
Yeah, I mean, Tesla's, you know, not by any means like rolling in the dough yet.
Yeah, and I mean, they were hanging by a thread at a couple points, and Elon Musk had to bail them out with his personal money a couple times. But when they went public, you know, they went gangbusters, and they're making it happen now. And I think that Apple, being that they have the money that they have, can definitely afford to make a foray into this market, and they obviously have the creativity to make something cool. But it is tough because you have to, I mean, you don't have to prove to a board, a regulatory board, that an iPhone's not going to kill you if you fall down with it, you know?
Right. Well, the other thing is Apple's not making cars yet. I mean, this is way too early. Like we were saying earlier, this may never result in Apple actually putting a car on the road. It may result in many other things, but, you know, so it's really too early to make a statement like that. But, you know, this statement should have been made when Tim Cook stands on stage and says, we're bringing out the Apple Card, you know, next year.
Yeah.
But even then, it'd be crazy, a crazy statement. It's just even crazier this far in advance, because all we know is Apple is looking at this technology. They're hiring engineers. They're gearing up to try and do something.
Yes.
Yeah, of course, at this point, where are we right now? Well, we're at the point where these other car makers may want to try and intimidate Apple out of the market,
right?
Because they don't want to have to deal with the same headaches that smartphone makers have had to deal with. Apple moved in, took over, and now they're just fighting to keep up.
Yeah.
It's a cool thing to think about. That's actually, you know, real exciting, right? Is that just even the hint of Apple doing anything is already having a disruptive effect.
Yeah, and it's one of those things where I see comments saying, why doesn't Apple just buy Tesla? I think it's good. It would not be good if Apple just bought Tesla and then there was just really like Nissan, Chevy, and Tesla/Apple doing it. So the more the better, right? Innovation,
yeah, competition is
spurred
is really
on by
good.
Yeah, competition. So... But then there's the report, as I mentioned earlier, that this is Bloomberg. They're pushing for 2020 for the Apple Car. If anything does come of it,
that's aggressive. I mean, that's 5 years.
That tells me that they've been working on this pretty hard for a couple of years already.
Yeah. If Apple could do something in 5 years, that would be amazing. I mean, they definitely have the resources, and it sounds like they're bringing in the talent to make it happen. You know, that's the thing, is like, that's why with the stories I've been seeing over the past week, I sort of completely 180'd on this thing, because it's like, if these are even half true, that they're hiring these kinds of people from these types of companies, and, you know, then there is some sort of hard push into this market. You know, this is definitely a concerted effort to do something.
Yeah. What kind of noise do you think is going to come out of your speakers when you turn on your Apple Car?
I hope it's the Mac startup chime.
I hope so too. And if not, then there will be mods. Who's going to jailbreak their car?
God.
That sounds dangerous.
Oh my God.
I jailbroke my car and ran into a tree.
Dangerous to a certain degree, I think.
What's that?
And just having computers control cars is dangerous to a certain degree.
Well,
and I think it's exemplified by, tell me, like, name how many sci-fi movies where they're flying around in the spaceship, right, and it's autonomously controlled and they have to like override.
How many space shuttle missions were completely controlled autonomously? I can count 135 of them.
Yeah.
Well, there were no computer
problems.
There's
always that point where something goes south and the human has to step in, right?
Well, so a little bit on the space shuttle, that thing cannot be landed without the computer. They had 5 computers in there because if the computer went out, it was over. I mean, and there are some astronauts who will lie to you and say that they manually landed the shuttle. It's not true. It could not have been landed. without the computer because of the way that it worked. And that tech was invented back in the late 70s.
Yeah, that's 1970s tech.
Yeah, and most modern cars, I mean, granted, they don't actually have any control over steering, but there's computers in every car almost.
Yeah, there's tons of assistive. And
that kind of stuff, yes, it has to be bulletproof, but it's one of those things where there are tried and true methods for developing that type of software and rigorous testing that goes through. Yes, it's going to be difficult, and that's why it's going to take a long time for the autonomous stuff to come online. But once it
we already have some of it. Like, you can get cars that can parallel park themselves.
Right.
That will automatically slow you down if you're getting too close to the car in front of you.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. I'm just thinking about, you know, you've kicked back, you've put your Apple Car into full autonomous mode. You're, you know, sleeping there, waiting to get to your destination, and then it
plows
to the white Apple
pole.
Logo, right? Oh. The entire dash goes white Apple logo.
Get a KP.
And you wake up to the sound of the Mac startup chime right before you hear the crash.
What? What's going on?
Chime. Uh-oh.
No, I know
bang.
They're
going
to have fail-safes to back us, but, you know, those are the kinds of things you think about, you know, because it doesn't happen that often where I get a hard crash like that, but every once in a while. And yeah. I wouldn't want to have that happening in my Apple Car.
Brings new meaning to the word crash.
Yeah. Well, you know, it adds in the possibility that some of the jokes we used to make about if Microsoft made a car, we could have those come true.
Oh, yeah. Backup computers is the way. I mean, talk to NASA. They'll help you out with that, Apple.
I didn't see any NASA engineers on their team yet.
I thought there might have been.
That they're not working on spacecraft.
Although there's at least one guy from General Dynamics.
Cool.
And they worked on the shuttle. I don't think they.
Oh, there you go, Dylan Thomason.
All right, let's start the rumor here. Apple's next objective is to disrupt the space flight industry. Virgin Galactic, you're on notice.
Well, here's the other thing. It's like we keep talking about cars. I mean, how the thing that we know today as a car at some point is going to change too, right?
Right.
And if a car becomes autonomous, is it really a car or is it like a personal transport vehicle or, you know?
Is it a transport robot?
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, is car too generic a term at some point?
Yeah. I mean, I like driving, but at some point I get sleepy and I need to, I need to get back home. But I can't be driving, so.
Yeah. So, I mean, this is also likely a very long-term play. And maybe spacecraft is part of that. Years,
sure.
50 years from now.
I was thinking maybe if you go to the bar and you're, you know, a little maybe too inebriated to drive yourself home, you say, hey, Siri, take me home. I'm too drunk.
And then she does.
And then your iPhone morphs into a personal transport vehicle and off you go.
Exactly. That's exactly what's going to happen. I think that's all we have to talk about. I was going to mention that If This Then That has kind of rebranded themselves. They're now just If is the app. I don't know what happens if you search for IFTTT on your...
They have Do now too. I'm confused because there's If and
okay.
Do.
That works.
So you have two categories now. You have something where it's a direct action. That's Do, meaning I'm going to take a photograph and I want to have that photograph put into my Evernote account, as an example. And then you have other actions, which are reactionary. They're triggers.
Oh.
And that's what traditional If This Then That is. So,
okay.
So the weather changes and your thermostat needs to be set to a higher temperature. There you go.
Gotcha. Okay. Neat. So there are new apps as well. So there's the standard.
Do I need these apps? I never had. Was there an If This Then That app?
Yes.
I never had it.
There is, yeah.
Oh, I've always just used the web interface.
Yeah, which works just fine. The app works just fine also. So if you want to do the do actions, meaning the stuff where it's specific task based on you saying this is what I'm going to do right now, you do need the apps for that.
How is Do different than Workflow?
do is different from workflow in that it's, I'm guessing, more limited than workflow, because workflow is designed to grab content from between apps in many cases. Whereas do is designed to take something that you're doing right now and then interact with that through another internet service for the most part. So it's like a subset of workflow.
Ah. I want to get little bit cloud bits that will hook up with if this then that and do some cool stuff with it. Do you guys know about little bits?
No.
They're like these little snap together modules that it's like a prototyping system, although I guess it was kind of designed as almost like a kid's science toy. And they're like these snap together bits, and so you can get a slider cute bit. Yeah, they're like little breadboards that are already like pre-programmed. So, you know, one will have an LED sensor on it, or one will have one that's an Arduino module, and they also have one that's like a cloud module that can talk to if this then that. So I was just like looking at the if this then that do site, and there's like a do action that's like tree fort power on. So someone's used a little bit to wire up lighting in their tree fort and then get controlled through.
That's really cool.
Like web interface. So I kind of started getting into this, looking at this stuff a little bit, because, you know, as we were saying earlier, I went to Universal. I just want to close with this because this is a cool thing, right? In the Harry Potter thing, they have these interactive wands, right? So you can get your Harry Potter wand and you can go to different windows throughout the place and cast spells. Like you wave the wand and then stuff happens in the window.
Oh, cool.
That's so really cool.
I started looking into the technology, and what it is it's using IR sensors and IR light tracking, basically, to detect a pattern and then just kick off the action. So I'm like, I wonder what you could put together with your Mac. And I discovered that, you know, your Wiimote, if you have a Wii, right?
Mm-hmm.
It uses the same kind of technology. So the sensor bar on your Wii, all it is it's a series of IR lights that send out an IR light, and then it receives a signal back, or the Wiimote itself has a reader in it. And so it can basically detect where it is in space or where it is on the screen and move the cursor around, right? So it's just an IR receiver. So it's an IR transmitter. That's what the bar is. And then the Wiimote's a receiver.
Interesting.
I thought it was the other way around. So that's really fascinating.
Well, so what's really cool is I found there's an app you can get for your Mac, and it's called, do you guys know about, now I'm going to blank on it. QuickTime. Quartz Composer.
Oh, yeah.
Right? So Quartz Composer can do this communications technology called OSC, and there is a Wiimote. It's like Darwin Remote OSC, which is this little app you can run, and you can connect via Bluetooth the Wii Remote to your Mac, and then you can capture like the accelerometer, the orientation, and the IR data from your Wii Remote and send it to Quartz Composer.
That's really cool.
Yeah. So what I figured out I could do is I could take the system. You have to hook up the light bar, and then you put the Wiimote basically on top of the light bar. And the way these wands from Universal work is they have a little reflector on the tip, and it bounces the IR light back from the tip of the wand back to the receiver, which is in the window. And that's the thing that's watching for the pattern. So with this little Quartz Composer thing, what you can do is basically the same thing. So the IR light goes out from the Wii bar, and then it hits the tip of the wand, and then it bounces back into the Wiimote's sensor so it can see the tip, you know, the IR light coming back at it. And then this OSC app, Darwin Remote OSC, transmits that via Bluetooth back to Quartz Composer. And then within Quartz Composer, you can get it to do different things with the visuals. So like I made it so that I can follow the tip of the wand and move a sphere around on the Mac screen.
See, this is why you're my hero, Adam.
So it's kind of cool. So what would be great is with this little bits thing and the web tip connected technology, some guys have played around with this a little bit, not with the wands, but I think there's going to be a way to actually make a little system where you could do like home automation stuff with your wand. So imagine like triggering lights to go on with little like receivers built out of Arduinos or something like that. Anyway, started playing around with it. It was kind of cool.
What is it called? It's not Darwin remote. Is that what it is?
Darwin remote. So like Darwin remote OSC.
Okay. Darwin remote OSC.
Yeah. And the OSC is like this communications protocol. I'm probably oversimplifying it, but basically it's a way you put in a port number and it just transmits the data from, you know, via Bluetooth that the Wii remote is receiving over to Quartz Composer. And Quartz Composer, you have to download now as part of the Xcode like graphics package toolkit. It's like a separate install with Xcode. I thought Apple had killed off Quartz Composer, but it's still around.
Cool. Yeah.
That actually makes me really happy because Quartz Composer is so amazingly useful.
Yeah. It's used a lot by artists and like music people to control like visuals. So there is actually an iOS app that does OSC as well. I forget what it's called, but you can get a control surface that you put on your iPad that sends OSC signals, and you could use Quartz Composer to read those and do different visualizations and things like that. So you could use it to play videos or wrap videos around spheres and have them play or control, you know, lighting and particle visualizations and all that sort of stuff. It's pretty neat stuff.
Neat. I'll add that to the show notes.
Awesome.
Yeah. If people want to know more about it, they can email me. I started messing around with it a little bit when I got back.
Email Adam. He'll tell you all about it.
I don't know what you can do with it, but, it's fun to play around with. But it's sort of like, because these wands, you know, they can't be used outside the park, but I think they can.
Did you steal it?
No.
Okay.
I have a Sirius Black one.
Okay, cool. All right. So we should do our iDevice picks and then wrap it up.
Oh, yeah, that wasn't my... I forgot we got iDevice picks. Sorry, yeah. I thought we were...
Jeff, what's your pick?
My pick is this amazingly awesome new app that just came out for the iPad called AstroPad. And what it does is it turns your iPad into a pressure-sensitive graphics tablet for your Mac. Oh. So think of a Wacom graphics tablet, like an Intuos, but well, actually, it'd be more like the Cintiq, because the Cintiq has the display built into it. So this would be more like a Wacom Cintiq tablet, and you already have your iPad, and so you can use whatever stylus you want, and it recognizes I think it's three different brands, the three popular brands of pressure sensitive styluses right now. And they're adding in support for 53's pencil. So, which is really cool. And it works with any app. So you can also use it as a remote control for your computer. So you could have your Mac sitting in one room and you could be doing everything that's on your Mac on your iPad while you're sitting in the bedroom.
It's basically just like a VNC kind of thing, right?
Yes.
Sort of.
It's a lot like that, but it's very fast and it's just so seamless the way it works. It's just amazingly easy to use and stunningly reliable. I've been very impressed with it so far. And I've been playing with it for just a few days. And you can set it so that that you're seeing only part of your screen on your iPad. So let's say you're doing photo editing in Photoshop and you're sitting at your desk in front of your computer, but you want to be doing the stylus part of your edits on your iPad, no problem. Just on your Mac, you resize the window that's visible to the iPad. So it's just the art area in your Photoshop window. And so then you're not wasting space on your iPad screen looking at controls that you're going to be managing through keyboard shortcuts or through your mouse as you're clicking on options on your Mac. So very cool, very slick. The drawing, I was drawing very quickly, and everything was showing up in real time on my Mac.
Nice.
It was impressive. And I kept jumping around to different programs to see where I'd have trouble. And every program that I was working in, not a problem. I even jumped over to OmniGraffle and was building Graffles for a while.
Neat.
Cool.
Yeah. Yeah. So the iPad app is free.
AstroPad.
Uh-huh. The Mac companion app that you need, that's $50.
Oh.
Yeah. So so this isn't something that
you're going to...
Yeah, this is a pro tool. This isn't the casual user thing. This is definitely a pro tool.
But you can try it out. It's free, right?
Oh, yeah. They have a demo, so you can try it out for like a week, I think, and see if it's something that you need to drop $50 on. But wow, it's really cool. You do need to have Yosemite on your Mac. Otherwise, not going to work.
But yeah, if this is, you're saying this is pro level stuff.
This is pro level stuff.
Yeah, and they're using GPU acceleration for the performance. Because if you've ever used like a remote control app, you know, some of the other like display ones, you'll notice the image quality is not that great on the iPad, right? They lower it so they can get higher frame rates and more fluidity.
Yes, that's true.
And if in a graphics app, you're not going to want that degraded image quality.
Yeah, it says it's blazing fast. And you can do it with USB, right? Plug her in?
Sure. Yes, you can. However, I was doing everything over Wi-Fi.
Neat.
My feeling is if you're going to be using this all the time, you probably want to have the flexibility of working without extra cables strung around. So I didn't even bother to start with USB. I just went right to Wi-Fi and ran with it.
Good idea.
And the whole setup was like a minute.
I like how they have the the Apple stylus pictured, like we hope.
With fingers Apple crossed. Stylus. I like that. It's cool. All right, check it out. It's called AstroPad, and there's a free trial. Adam, what's your pick?
My pick is, and hopefully I'm not stealing anybody's. I was worried Jeff was going to steal mine, is a new game called Alto's Adventure. It is a endless runner style game, if you're into that sort of stuff. But it is, again, just one of these beautiful, beautiful apps. It's from a developer called Snowman. And basically, you are a snowboarder. And the story is you're a snowboarder. Your llamas have escaped and they're running away and you need to catch them. But I just totally love the art style of this thing. And I also love all the sorts of things that it's tracking. So basically you're snowboarding down hills and over ramps and across, you're grinding across surfaces and stuff like that. Scaring birds, catching llamas, doing backflips. The more sort of tricks that you do, the more speed you build up. And as you build up speed, your scarf gets longer and longer to like indicate like how much speed you've built up.
So your scarf goes total Doctor Who on you.
Totally. Or, you know, like, what am I thinking of? The guy's cape. Oh, I'm blanking on the comic book character now.
But Spawn's cape gets
Spawn,
bigger.
Spawn, there you go. Yeah. Okay. Like Spawn's cape, basically. That's who I was thinking of. It's just flat out by the game. I want to say it was 99 cents.
$2.
$2, okay. There's no in-app purchase. It has Game Center integration, which is kind of fun. And there's also this great stat system in it that keeps track of like everything. So you have your best combo, like how far you've gone, the total number of llamas that you saved. There's birds in the game. So as you go by, birds get spooked. It keeps track of that. Like it keeps track of everything. The number of rocks you've jumped, the number of cliffs you've crashed into. I don't know. It goes on and on and on, which is kind of cool and fun too. But just the visual style of the whole thing is my favorite. And as you play the game, also you go through different periods. So there'll be, you know, times when it's night, times when there's lightning storms or snowstorms. And then as you level up, you can continue to get additional players. So you start out with Alto originally, and then like the second player I unlocked is Maya, who she can do backflips better, but doesn't get as much speed. So they'll have different parameters. I need to get to level 41 when you unlock the llama, but I'm only on, I think, level 12 or 18. And so you level up as you go along. You also earn coins, which you can use to spend to up certain abilities. So there's like a magnet you can get that'll help collect coins faster. There's like a hover sort of feature that lets you smash through rocks rather than, you know, normally you have to jump over rocks and things like that. But just super, super fun, and visually just very, very nice game. So that's my latest obsession. And I think it came out like last week. So there you go. Alto's Adventure.
Cool. I wanted to say I'm all done playing Crossy Road because my lady like completely beat me forever and ever, and I'm just done. let's see, what was her? Jeez, it takes for, okay, 340. She's at 340.
That's a lot of roads. 340 roads.
Yeah,
you could beat that.
I'm at 243. I'm just done. I'm gonna try and beat her at this game. So that's the way I roll.
All right, this one's fun. This one I like a lot. And that end, what was great for me is, you know, the Endless Runner style is there's lots of games. You know, my original favorite being Jetpack Joyride.
Yeah.
Yeah, but you know, it can get overdone. This is a nice new take on it.
Yeah, it looks like nice. Cool. So my pick this week is Calcbot.
Woo!
It's free.
Old favorite.
It's an old favorite, and it has a new look, and it's all That's updated. Cool. We've been waiting
Uh-oh,
for a
what
long
they do?
Time.
They didn't mess it up, did they?
No, they made it better.
Oh.
No, they made it better. So let's see what they...
Now it kind of looks like P-Calc.
It does kind of look like P-Calc. You can get different themes for it if you want. It's the same robot face for the icon, which is nice. You still have the calculation tape, so you can see the history. It'll actually sync your tape across to your different devices, including your Mac, because there's Calcbot for Mac now, which is nice. And they've merged it with ConvertBot. So now there are conversions all up in there. So you can swipe over
to the
left.
In the pro version, right?
No. They're in there for everybody. But if you want to do something other than, because it's free now, but if you want to actually type in, like, I want, you know, I have 500 square yards and I want to get it into square feet, then you have to do the pro, I believe. But I think it's $2. Yeah.
I don't know. I'm just
looking
upgraded.
At it now. It says $2.
$2, you get the unit conversion.
Oh, no, it says conversion is part of the pro version.
It gives you the basic. It gives you the base conversions, though. I'm looking at it right now. Yeah, so it tells you 1 square centimeter is equal to X square feet, one kilometer, et cetera. All these kind of things, just the base conversions for you. So you can get all that stuff, but if you want to do specific numbers, then you have to... upgrade, but you get tons of stuff in there. You also get the unlimited history tape, custom constants. That's one of the really neat things. So now that I'm doing like physics and stuff, having constants in a calculator is awesome. So like the speed of light, Avogadro's number. Let me see what else you get in here. So they have tons of them built in. Atomic mass, Celsius temperature conversion, electron mass, I don't know what Euler's number is, but that's in there. Golden ratio, pi, of course, you got to have that. Planck's constant, standard acceleration of gravity, all those pretty important. And they're in there. And if you get the pro version, then you can get custom constants, which is cool. So it's awesome. So it's free right now, free forever. And so if you want the extra stuff, then it's $2 and totally worth it because they're awesome. It's TapBots.
How do I change my theme?
You go into the settings and you go themes.
I don't know how to get to the settings. I'll figure it out.
It's kind of a butt. You have to pull down for the tape. And there's a little gear in the right.
So your settings are on your tape.
Yeah. And then if you rotate over, then you get all your extra neat stuff. So.
Oh, theme packs are extra too.
Those are extra as well. But come on, it's a calculator. Get over it. You don't need themes. You need math theme, and that's it. So,
I didn't get the pro theme since I upgraded.
You did?
Yep.
Cool. Cool, cool. All right. So with that, you can find all of our picks in the show notes at theiosshow.com. Review the show on iTunes and tell a friend. We love that. Check out Linda and Audible. Those are both Tyos is the code. Audiblepodcast.com/Tyos and Linda.com/Tyos for your free gifts for that. Feedback at theiosshow.com is the email address. Advertising is handled by Backbeat Media at backbeatmedia.com. Jeff Gamet is at the Mac Observer, macobserver.com. TMO Daily Observations podcast. He's doing that every day, every weekday.
He's
at Jay Gamet on Twitter as well.
Thanks and for it's being always here. Awesome to be here.
Yeah, it's great having you. Adam Christensen is at the MacCast, maccast.com, at MacCast on Twitter, and member.maccast.com is the member version of the show.
Yes, sir.
And I'm at Michael Johnston on Twitter, and I'm on Appler. We're all on Appler. Check that out. Getappler.com, GetAppler.com. And man, this show went long, but that's good. We had a lot to talk about, surprisingly, even though there were two principal topics.
Two principal topics, one of which was chickens.
And the other was puffins.
There you go.
So with that, we'll see you next time on the iOS show.
An internet.
How are we going to communicate this?
A stylus.
We don't want to carry around a mouse, right? So what are we going to do? Oh, a stylus, right? We're going to use a stylus.